And in the last 20 seconds, you can tell the professional level of this podcasting where we eat apples and burp into microphones while recording. We've only been doing this for 320 episodes, folks. Give us a break.
Every single episode, Ben cracks a can open like right in front of the mic. I think it's every single episode. Usually I can cut it out, but sometimes he does it as he's talking into the mic and there's just nothing I can do about it.
That's just ambiance.
There's nothing you can do about how many times I bump into something.
Just edit it out.
For the love of God.
There's a lot of bumps.
Grant has grabbed the mic with both hands and like Aerosmith shouted his belch into it. Like, it's not an accident.
Over and over.
When eating an apple, I at least look the other way and don't pay attention to what's going on.
I figured this cold open has run its course and, you know, I will be
cut it right here.
Yeah, it's already been cut. So this is not even, you know, recorded material. So I'll burp. But then people have to lecture me for burping.
Leave it, you coward.
Welcome, members of Little Captain Travis. That's our name for you, the listening audience. And a special welcome to members of our super secret Double Diamond fan club, the Hoggies. Four members of our super secret fan club, set your decoder loincloths to, yup, just a loincloth, and meet me out on a windswept freezing glacier. Because this week, we're talking about the 1983 animated film, Fire and Ice. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, Lil Cap and Travis, the year is 1983. Reagan was still aware that he was in the White House. Ice cream cost a nickel. And animated features were the staple of movie theaters, and the country was going crazy for swords and sorcery. The timing was perfect for a plucky little animated film about the struggle between good and evil, might and magic, monsters, and barbaric people who never mention their names or explain what they're doing or what's happening.
You could still do some pretty heavy racism in 1983.
Oh, yeah, you could. Yeah, you could.
With almost no dialogue. There is little dialogue in this film. That's what makes it so masterful. This is a film based on the artwork of Frank Frazetta, who would make these fantastical. You've probably seen one airbrushed on the back of a van. These images of Frank Frazetta.
Frank Frazetta is legit fantastic.
Automotive grade steel was his medium of choice.
You may know some of his fantasy illustrations. He did a lot of like naked men murdering humans with axes, knives, and swords. He also did a lot of nearly naked women crouching next to panthers, leopards, tigers, lions, pumas, cheetahs, cougars, jaguars, bobcats, lynx, ocelots, and the occasional lizard.
Ooh.
This movie was animated by animation legend and monster Ralph Bakshi. A disgusting animation mastermind. This movie came out in 1983. In 1982, the big movies were Conan the Barbarian and the Beastmaster. Mm. And Bakshi had just been given a new movie after his 1977 movie Wizards was a big hit. So he and his buddy Frank Frazetta got together, hired some comic book artists to pretend to write a story, and then they began animating these beautiful paintings in a style of in a new technological style of animation called rotoscoping.
Now, before you get into rotoscoping, Corey, I think it's important to note that what you said earlier about how it's based on some fantasy paintings that a dude did. Imagine a movie based on some paintings, and you will understand the full scope of the story and characters and the world.
And to build the story, he hired artists.
Yes,
right. Not writers.
Paint backgrounds for me. Paint more backgrounds for me.
When you're told a picture is worth a thousand words, you don't realize a lot of that is grunts.
That's what, like 6-7 pages of the script? I mean, you get enough of those pictures, you got the full feature-length film.
Okay. All true things. However, the action's good. I enjoy the action in this movie. The people getting pelted with arrows when they die, all of that is pretty good to me. The fights and the wizard stuff. So it's like, okay, it's just a fight scene, and then, you know, okay, there's no sweet dialogue, whatever. There's no memorable lines.
to speak of.
And between characters that you barely know or understand.
Oh, sure, sure. Dark Wolf,
why are they doing this? Who is that?
Yeah.
Did they say Dark Wolf's name in the entire movie?
No.
Not a single time.
I don't think they say the main character's name until like halfway through the movie.
Yeah.
I think Dark Wolf is the main character, and he
kill the bad guy, and the main character doesn't, which is...
I don't know. That's actually kind of interesting, because, you know, that Larn guy is supposed to do it? Come on. And then you got Dark Wolf. Oh, man. Do we go right into Dark Wolf now, or do we wait a little bit?
We got to get into the names right now. There's like a weird anti-Bechdel test going on where no character talks to another character and introduces themselves.
Nah.
There's like... Dark Wolf, our main character, is never named. There's a bunch of people named in the credits that I'm like, I wonder who they were.
Yeah.
And the character we're with, our Luke Skywalker kind of S character, I guess he's the main character. I don't even know. That's the story.
It's hard to tell.
Larn.
I can't tell. Yeah, okay, yeah. His name is pronounced different in every scene. Farb, Blarn, Snarb. And as we go through the plot of this movie, I am going to use whatever phonetic sounding I heard in that scene.
Okay.
Instead of describing the plot of this movie, which there isn't of, would one of you like to just describe the poster?
Okay. If you see this poster, at the top is like the most fearsome barbarian you've ever seen in your fucking life. But he's got some sort of mask or headdress or something and glowing eyes. And he looks like he's just going to kill. He's just going to kill, kill, kill.
He's a killing machine.
He's a killing machine. Then you have a hot, sexy lady. Then there is a guy who, I don't know what he's doing down there. He sort of has a karate kung fu hand sticking out, but he's wearing the same thing as the other guy with just the fur underpants.
You know what? Watch this. We can seamlessly move. Matt, please describe this this poster as a guitar solo.
You guys have heard Dio, right?
More or less. The cover is badass. The animation 100%. Technology of rotoscoping is super badass. Rotoscoping is when you trace over actual footage that you shot and it adds a kind of like realistic motion and like fluidity to the animation. It sometimes can be used to great effect, and sometimes, you know, it kind of falls apart. Most of the times in this movie where it was used heavily, I think it works really well.
Yeah.
If you don't know what rotoscoping is, a good example would be like all the Disney princesses dancing were filmed and then, you know, rotoscoped over. Every lightsaber you saw in the original Star Wars was hand-drawn in afterwards. Or adding like interesting things to people, like the penguins dancing around Mary Poppins.
Oh, okay. I was going to ask if rotoscope, because I don't know much about rotoscoping, if that technology meant that you couldn't put clothes on anyone, but clearly the other ones that you just described, they're wearing clothes, so that wasn't it.
Yeah.
So it was a choice.
I don't think the concept artist Frank Frazetta has ever seen clothes, Matt.
No, I think he's invented them, and he's stretched his imagination as far as it'll go. From
which is absolutely nothing,
which
crack.
Is like, what if you just, you cover the front bits, and then there's like a string in the back.
Yes.
Yeah. And I mean, we'll see lots of male ass, but also we'll like really focus on the female ass. Like,
yeah,
there's
that is
scene unnecessary angles of women crawling on their hands and knees. It's like, let's make sure we get this angle, because otherwise it wouldn't be creepy.
So this is pre-internet days. If you could not have access to even softcore porn, if you had access to you were good.
This would work.
You were good. It would absolutely work.
I've made do with far less.
The sexy lady is wearing what I would call the atom of clothing, as Grant said. You can't, if you have any less cloth, any one string fewer, you're not wearing clothes. If she has more, then, you know, you can go, but yeah, that's, you can wear no less.
So along those lines, Little Captain Travis, if you've never heard of this, perhaps it's because the reviews were from the LA Times, Fire and Ice is as unintentionally funny as fantasy could get. And about the sexiness, Gene Siskel says, if you love comic books but can't bear the unnecessary bother of turning pages, and it helps if you're a 12-year-old boy obsessed with sex.
Like, all right.
Pretty accurate.
Fair? But the animation was good. It's not just, it's sparse because you can see, like, some is just clearly it's a painting and then, like, well, what are we doing here? The background is just a painting. But there was a scene where Flarb falls down through those vines, like the vines break his fall. That was fucking dope. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not just the rotoscope of how he moves.
It was early in the movie, which is why they put all that effort into it.
You know what? Let's get right into it. Let's just go through the movie.
Chinese food and beer and get out of here. Let's call it a day. Yeah, all right.
And also, just we're out of money. Fuck it.
Okay, let's go through it. I'm gonna go through each sequence in the film, and we can talk about the way the motion works or doesn't, and you know, give it our standard awards. Ben, you have a hand up.
Yes. Was this the Hogan's Heroes theme song? Just curious. Did anybody else connect the? There's definitely an overlap where it's Hogan's Heroes that they're doing.
Ben, I watched it on mute because there's no words.
All right, fair enough.
All right, before we even get started, this movie gets the award for the ballsiest non-animated opening to an animated feature. You want to talk about a time crunch.
They're putting their effort into the movie and like they're not doing a cool intro. It's just like, put the text up there.
We don't need to grab you. We're going to give you text. And then during the title sequence, you get some cool Frank Frazetta like concept art and his like really cool pencil drawings. Static pencil drawings.
But that's
is
it.
The opening film.
He handed those to them like, these are my ideas for you to animate. And they were just like, yeah, that doesn't work. And they just, it's a pencil sketch a drunken old woman talking over it. And it's like, where's the animation?
She did sound drunk.
These are his sketches. These aren't even Frank Frazetta's paintings.
Right.
This is concept art that made it into the movie.
This is a wish, Juliana.
So,
very. It was an interesting choice.
Reminiscent. We get a voiceover from the evil queen witch Juliana, who's couple cups of wine deep at this point, and our opening sequence is a pasty, long-haired man straining as white erupts all around him.
Has a wet dream, and then a village is destroyed.
I have seen that, by the way. Him, like, going, just grunting and vibrating, and someone's like, this is me in the morning when I get to work. It's sit on the toilet, like, or me after the chili cook-off or something like that, and it's very funny.
I'm just saying, if they didn't mention ice, these white explosions as he grunted, I would not have known what was going on.
Yeah.
The evil Necron is attacking his glacier, is going south, and it destroys a village before his subhumans come in.
Mm.
And this long intro of white explosions, men being crushed by chunks of ice and rock, goes on to the climbing sequence that we mentioned earlier, in which our hero, knocked out, escapes the battle. Farb? Blarn? Blarn escapes the subhumans with sneaking up a mace crush to the face. This is one of those scenes where, like, yes, the animation looks just like a man getting crushed in the face with a mace. I hope they got that in one take. There's like, you know, like I said, it's a, like a badass, like, you know, spear fight, and Flarb escapes through the jungle and like climbs up these vines to outrun his pursuers, which to me looked like they filmed like a greased jungle gym and like taped a bunch of fruit snacks to the top. Like it's a mad dash, like scramble. It looks so good, and I would like to give this entire sequence the award for the sequence that should have been the opening of this movie.
Yeah.
We had to get through like 10 minutes before we finally see like an absolute action sequence. I love this bit. And
that's very good.
It ends with Flarb is cornered at the top of this this jungle world, and he just jumps to his death and through and down into a valley, gets caught by a bunch of vines, and crushes just barely to the floor.
Earlier on, the award for Sea Gentian for Mud People goes to a glacier, which apparently that was that. There's guys standing at the ramparts of the fort. You know, it's like you can picture them out there. The hordes are coming, but instead, it's a glacier that's slowly getting closer to the wall, and they've got spears and they're just poking it at it with shields and a spear. Like, ready, men? What? What are you gonna do?
You've trained for this. We couldn't possibly have trained for this.
keeps telling him to hold as a glacier approaches.
Yeah, what do you mean?
Don't
stab till you see the whites of it. Ah, shit.
No.
That's our climate change strategy is, you know, stand in Miami Beach with spears.
Mm-hmm.
Hold.
Yes.
If that water starts to rise, use spears back down.
Stab it back down.
When I first saw that, I was like, okay, so he's magically going to crush him with a glacier. What are they fighting? And then the subhumans come in after that. I was like, okay, that makes a little bit of sense. Yeah. But until then, I was like, what the absolute fuck do they think they're going to do against a glacier? And they're really like holding like a club against it. Like, here it comes.
Yeah.
Anyways, Farb, the last survivor of his village, we move on to the Firekeep sequence in which we are introduced to King Jarl and the lovely Princess Tigra. There's a scene of like Tigra and her tutor, and these are just scantily clad women. This is the very scantily clad woman from the cover.
It's relatable. Like most people, when your tutor is teaching you something and you do like stripper moves, that's how you.
Yeah, I was gonna say this is the scene most likely pulled actually from a porn, rotoscoped from a porno, because that the way she was like laying on her back with her legs in the air, like they just copied that from a porno, right?
It can't be the only scene they copied from a porno. That one probably is the most likely, but it can't be the only one.
The award for first scene in the movie to be
first
rotoscoped.
First scene in the movie to be rotoscoped, yes. I agree. The glacier one, I don't think is in a porno.
They shot lots and lots of reference footage for this scene and didn't end up using any of it.
Yeah, it's in Ralph Bakshi's personal collection, I feel like.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
There's no way he doesn't brag about that at the bar. The emissaries from Ice Keep, Ice Castle, Ice Town, whatever it was. Necron's minions come. And while they're talking with King Jarl about peace, they kidnap the Princess Tigra. And this is one of those great rotoscoping moments. Rotoscoping looks so good in slow motion. It makes this, like, there's a slow motion as the monsters come in, punch the tutor down into a pile, and then steal the naked woman, and every bit of it absolutely works. And then we're treated with a PTSD scene in which they try to chase the minions with the dragon hawks, which are pterodactyls, and I had heavy metal flashbacks.
They're pterodactyls, but they have like lame Flintstones looking faces. Like, not even like cool looking pterodactyls. Unfortunately,
they
like,
could have been cooler.
Come on,
what
they definitely could have been cooler.
Why can't we nail pterodactyls? What is it about them that we just can't get?
I think it's interesting that you describe the woman as naked, and yet in the very next scene she's going to lose more clothes. And you accurately, like, you were close. You were pretty much right when you said she was naked. That's how little clothes she was already wearing. But then she loses more.
She was wearing a piece of cellophane, I think. And,
Yes. They got rid of that.
Yeah.
I got some awards for her outfit at the end. Anyways, the minions from Ice Keep steal the princess. And they run away. And as they're taking her back to Ice Peak, they stop for some water and rest, and Tigra gets pushed in, and she starts doing like a sexy like bathing like burlesque routine to distract the subhumans. And this is when I want to give the award for subhuman egalitarian thought, because only now do they see her as a sexual human.
Yes. Before, there's just
only now
they're doing a job.
They have been running with her, holding a naked woman under their arm, and only now they're like, oh, breasts.
Hey, she's pretty hot. It's because it was like the moment in the movie where she took her glasses off and shook her hair out of the ponytail. You know, like going to bathe, she had to take her hair down, and they were like, hey, you're actually kind of hot.
Hey, can you lose that tag on your sleeve? There's just too much. Yeah. There's just too much. Oh, God, without that extra string of cloth, she's really attractive. Mm. She escapes. The minions chase after her. We have one of my favorite scenes in any movie of something hiding in a log and someone reaching in and someone getting bit by the other thing in a log.
Horrifying monster.
So I have to give out the award for never stick anything into anything awareness czar.
I'm in a jungle. I'm just going to... He had a spear, too. He could have poked a spear around in there. Instead, he's just like, I'll stick my hand in this.
He's noodling.
Junk. He was hoping to land a lunker, and he did, dude. Mm-hmm. That was a lunker
of whatever that thing was.
Yeah.
And even though they are subhumans, they were very good with that spear to not stab through his arm as they're stabbing the thing off of it. It's like, well, pretty precise.
That would have been helpful a second ago.
I know this is later on, but just with the subhuman kind of thing, later on when they're writing to the keep, he's like, no, don't look at them. We don't acknowledge this trash. And it's like, look at the scoreboard, bitch. Like, they keep kicking your ass. So subhumans, like, they waste the regular, the fire people. They whip their asses. Yeah. So they have monkey kind of faces, but anyway. So yeah, they're pretty handy with the spear.
There's a great bit here as she's getting away where a giant lizard attacks, in which filmed a lizard eating some food and then filmed some guys walking around, and you put the two together, and this is absolute rotoscoping magic.
Yeah, because I thought, like, oh, that scene was cool. So that's how they did it. They had a lizard eating stuff, and then, okay.
Yeah, I filmed two separate things. So this is a moment where it works. And the minions have to report back to the Queen Juliana with a little message powder in the fire.
Mm-hmm.
Blows up into a smoking vision of her. I kind of liked that magic. That was nice.
Me too. I'll highlight one later on. But I enjoyed like how magic was in this world. Like that's a cool thing that you put some powder in the fire and it'll summon
You rang.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah. For sure. And we move on to a temple ruin sequence where we meet Jorn, or Barn, what was his name?
Gurn Blanston.
Gurn Blanston. Gurn's walking through the Badlands wondering after his village was destroyed, and he's chased by hyenas, or wolves or something, and he gets past them the only way he knows how. By pole vaulting.
Yeah, he does some pole vaulting.
I was waiting for him to stab him, and I was like, whoa, okay, pole vault, all right.
Now, then, track and field, the ancient
art. For a spear. I mean...
Well, right before that, he blasts one with a spear and kills it. Then there's a couple more, and he's like, he's got a bigger stick, and it's like, oh, he's going to skewer both of them? Okay, pole vault. All right, you did the javelin, now it's pole vault. We're on to the next event.
Yeah.
I just love it. They chase him into these ruins, and he just... Blarn gets to a dead end, and he just blindly turns around and starts stabbing... And there's nothing there because our unnamed hero, or whatever he is, our unnamed badass Dark Wolf shows up, blasts one with an arrow, and then gives the rest of them his evil stare, and they back the fuck off. And it seems to me like the temple had a carving of this guy right there.
Yeah, his face.
Never explained, never hinted at. And so this movie gets the prestigious Nope, You Figure It Out award.
The best story is the story you tell yourself. So go ahead. Go ahead.
We'll wait.
Ooh, I bet that was good.
Dark Wolf.
We own the rights.
Proves himself through unnamed until you get to the credits. But he is a total badass, okay? He is an indestructible force or an unstoppable force. He whips everyone's ass. The more the merrier. Bring it on. He'll whip their asses. And I was thinking, like, at one point in that guy's life, he was just like, fuck it. I'm just going to go be a badass. I'm just going to wander the wilderness and be a total badass. I'm going to get a temple with my face on it. And I'm just going to, that's just what I'm going to fucking do. He didn't try to find or rejoin another society. He was just like, fuck it. I'm going to be a badass.
And he's like making clay pots or something. Then he's like, hey, this sucks. What if I just, like, was a huge badass? Fuck this. I'm going to start right now. He spikes a clay pot. And then,
I was picturing him in the checkout line at the grocery store, and he's got a couple of things in his line, and the lady in front of him's like got her coupons, and she's like complaining that, no, it should be good. And he just says, you know what? Fuck. He drops his food and just walks out of the store, picks up an axe, and starts killing
people. Just slowly taking his clothes off.
Three times I was at a grocery store, there was an old lady trying to get an expired coupon to work.
Yes.
It was expired.
Grant's going to become a barbarian killer.
I am this close to becoming a fucking badass. You better watch out.
He's just going to knock his cart over and just start stripping down to nothing, just to his underwear, and in the parking lot, just like rip the head off a service dog and plunk it on top of his head as a helmet. Fuck it. I'm out. I'm out of society. Fuck it.
It'll just be a plastic shopping bag with two eye holes cut.
I was just going to say plastic shopping bag.
Start with that. Okay.
Actually, I go to Giant Eagle, so it'd be a paper shopping bag.
That's true.
You know,
true.
Take that, rising oceans.
First victim, the rising oceans. I'm using a paper bag.
God, we are killing the giving fuck out of climate change.
Giving them that Hulk Hogan leg drop. Anyway, Gord, you were saying something about a movie.
Like I was saying. Blarn ends up in this like Dark Wolf temple. I have no idea what's going on with this temple. Is chilling there, snacking on a boar that he killed, and Tigra escaped from the minions. Shows up and like tries to snack on some of his boar, and they have like a little meat cute, which I call a meat, as it is about meat. And then we get treated to the most ass-centered berry-picking animated sequence I have ever seen.
Hey, you know what's great about this? It's not just women ass, it's man ass too. Whatever you're into, yeah, boy, do they have it for you.
The rear end of whatever it is you want, it's there.
It's there. Yeah. So, hot dudes, hot chicks, ass. That's what we got.
I'm pretty sure in the rotoscoping, you know, the princess in the front looks like your typical cartoon fantasy porn star with, you know, giant melon breasts or whatever. But from the rear, I think the rotoscope model was Lawrence Taylor, because her like legs and ass of a 6'4", 250 linebacker, it was too realistic to
Matt. If you look at the behind the scenes footage, they have two people in a costume like Snuffleupagus, like to play her ass from behind.
One in each leg.
It's an incredible ass.
Yeah. It's amazing. So Marn and Tigra fall in love until a tentacle. This place is lousy with monsters. Tentacle octopus monster tries to kill them while they're sexy swimming, and she swims to the shore, and he gets spit up on the other side. She gets captured by the subhumans, and Marn, unconscious, is found by Dark Wolf.
Have we commented on Flurn's haircut yet?
Like he's got, that's great.
I mean, he's got the typical
He-Man
from the He-Man in the front, party in the back. Because it's like, what, it's typical. Oh yeah, he's got the thing. But then, why does he have a 4-foot rat tail all the way down? Really,
Matt,
fuck yeah, that's
He-Man
why.
In the front, She-Ra in the back.
Yes.
It's fucking badass. That's why.
I was just going to say, it was right about this time that I'm like, man, they did a really good job of animating the braids in a ponytail. Like, some attention to detail there.
Yeah.
Marn wakes up tied to a travois. Our unnamed wolfman had him tied there while he was healing, releases him, and takes him on as, like, ward, you know, come along with me. He suffers him to live. That is what Dark Wolf, that is the nicest thing Dark Wolf can do, is allow you, decide not to kill you.
You're not standing in my way of me killing that bad guy? Okay.
Right.
I guess I won't axe you in half.
So that she doesn't run away again, they tie Tigra to the watchman, and then proceed to get blackout drunk. like you do. Our crew show up and attack, just straight up ass kicking. The footage here of Dark Wolf attacking these guys is like a bear attacking a kindergarten. It's just so one sided, and amazing,
and pretty cool. I absolutely most people love watch this. It. Yeah,
right. Tigra runs away while our heroes lead them on a merry chase, and Tigra is found by a giant who takes her to the witch. Witch has a name, but only in the credits. Mm-hmm. So we're just going to call her the witch.
This least successful witch of all times.
I'm surprised she has a name even in the credits, considering this was clearly added in later as a way to add like 6 minutes to the runtime, because it barely got over 80 minutes as it was.
And bridge a plot point.
That's being generous.
I don't think it did anything. Right. I think they were right back where they started, captured by the subhumans.
Yeah.
She's captured by the subhumans. She gets away. She finds this witch in the forest who, you know, figures out who she is, realizes that, you know, she's, you know, wanted by Necron and that this will bring danger to her. She wants to use Tigra as a bargaining chip. And when the subhumans come back, they just kill them.
Yeah, she cast the magic spell of making it seem like plot might start happening, but then it doesn't.
Right.
It's invisible.
Yeah. The worst witch of all
the
time.
Witch?
She clearly has magic powers and then just gets smoked right away. But
she just gets stabbed
Tigra,
by something.
Sometimes Tigra is making smart decisions or doing something like stabbing people or something like that. This time, she gets carried by a galoot to a witch's tent and drinks wine when she gets there. No! Never drink the wine when anywhere a galoot takes you, especially a witch's hut. Especially a witch's hut. Don't
drink
the wine.
I think it was a sub-galoot.
I can't stress
I think
that
it was
enough.
It was a sub-galoot.
Oh, a sub-galoot. You know,
it's even worse.
Ben's got a good point about there being like rules of thumb here. When your only tool is a horde of subhumans, every problem looks like killing your enemies and taking what you want. There's no bargaining with the witch.
Yeah.
Although when the witch is dead and Blarn comes by looking for Tigra, the dead reanimated witch scene, one of my favorite in the...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And like you mentioned before about the magic, how it's kind of different from some fantasy stuff, he just walks by like a smoldering tent and the skeleton just sits up like animated with vengeance to tell him like, go kill. And it was like... That's cool. That's not how that usually works in fantasy things. So I appreciated that.
Yeah, that's one of the better scenes in the movie and some of the better use of the rotoscoping. The minions take Tigra to sea, and Flarn feels like he's missed the boat until he sees the prince show up. The prince, Taro. Okay, the king sends the prince. Let's just go and talk about peace with the enemy. The prince saying, but you know he'll kill me. I have to give the award to only sane human in the entire story goes to Prince Taro. Everything he says makes sense. And he has to eye-rollingly follow all the terrible decisions of his father.
The father gets the award for best correction of advice because when the son says like, but he'll kill me. What are you talking about? And he says, we must take that risk. You must take that risk. He instantly corrects himself and goes, no, we must take that risk.
Yes. Yeah, we're good. Wait, I know you. Yeah, you are definitely.
I rewound that like three times. Like, did he really just say that? Yes, he did.
Hey, when I say we must take that risk, I mean I'll stand next to a lever that releases lava to keep me safe.
I'll stay as far away as possible and release the lava. You go on the suicide mission. I mean the mission of peace. Oh, sorry. I mean the suicide mission of peace.
I mean your suicide mission.
I'm sorry. Your suicide mission for peace.
Back at Ice Peak or Ice Cave or whatever it's called, the Queen Juliana gives Tigra to Necron to be his wife, and our pale, long-haired, effeminate aristocracy who spends all day loosely draped in a purple velvet gown, and somehow he doesn't go for it. Somehow he doesn't go for Tigra as his wife.
The guy who we just animated character of all time. There is no... You might have Jessica Rabbit or something that you're like, whoa, wow. No, this is animated sex. It's just sex somehow come alive on the page. And he's like, nope.
He laughs at the idea, like, what?
Yeah. Like, what? That thing? That thing?
Yeah. The guy who just grunted through a 10-minute Glacier Shot compilation is all of a sudden, like, not into that. And so, of course, he just says, well, put her on the pile. The pile of the dead and dying that they have. Put her on the pile.
Which you have.
I love
that's
that.
That's what you got.
The prince's boat arrives with Blarn on the back, who sneaks off. And as the prince enters, the hordes of howling subhumans... gather to hoot and shout at the prince, and Marn sneaks in during this distraction. And I have to give out the award for it. The character I want to see more of goes to that weird voodoo lady in the crowd. What is she about?
Right.
We get one shot of her.
was she in the credits?
It would seem, yeah. She's
played by
Queen
people.
Josephine the Fourth or something. It's like, what?
Yeah, exactly.
There's something that was not explained here.
Right, it says young Queen Josephine.
Oh, young Queen Josephine, yes.
Like there's an old one.
There's time-traveling Queen Josephine. Hold on here. They did not explain this whole thing.
Just as predicted, the prince goes to talk with Necron, and Necron uses his magic to have them kill all of each other and thrown on the pile. There's a thing
mind
he's
control
got going
is pretty
on here.
Cool.
He's
that's
got a system.
Move.
Yeah, the
I like how that
force
looked.
Him force everyone to turn on each other.
Yeah, and you didn't think like I thought he would get stopped right before he does himself in, but like, wow, fuck. All right.
Cops can't do shit about it.
What, did he search through the pile? There's a whole fucking pile over there.
His fingerprints are on the weapon. He did it himself. Yeah. Yeah.
That's what Necron's whole thing was. Cops can't do shit, Mom. I'm just going to have them kill themselves. Cops can't do shit. The glacier made three left turns. They can't even pull me over.
There's a moment as the dead bodies of the prince and his retinue are being thrown on the pile. There's a moment where Marn uses this distraction to fire off an arrow at Necron. And, of course, Wizard's not having any of that, says, come here and, you know, fight me. In a very classic villainy, like, you know, you amuse me, you have fight in you. Mm. And Marn and the Wizard are fighting. Larn gives him a dual feint and cuts him across the chest. Lands a blow. And just as Necron's completely amazed. Oh, my God, how did you cut me? And Larn, like, rears up to hit him, swings, and just stops as Necron, not even looking up, just raises his hand. This is my absolute favorite. This is one of my favorite scenes in the movie, and I have to give it the award for, of course, a wizard wouldn't let a villager have a chance. it's the most unfair fight that makes it look like, you know, it really puts the bad guy is like, oh, fuck, he is absolutely powerful. Landed a hit, and then he, like, calls stop to the game.
The Harlem Globetrotters, right, now, they hand the ball to the guy for the Generals, and right when he's going to shoot it, they're behind him and they pants him, and then they take the ball back and then they dunk on him. Like, hey, giving you a free shot, you fool.
Somehow Necron is more interested in this sweaty naked man than he was for the naked woman, so he has Flarn thrown in jail as a plaything. And Tigra loudly plans to break him out before she is captured again. Mm-hmm. And during her recapture, Larn does give an amazing animated beatdown to the guard that comes into his cell.
Yes.
That was another one of those, good. Like, rotoscoping absolutely works here. He makes it out. Necron sends a blizzard after him to stop his escape, but Dark Wolf shows up.
Do you know any secrets about the blizzard animation? Because that snow looked awesome.
Did film fake snow in front of a green screen? It looked cool.
Yeah, it had to... Yeah,
they had
it was not
the Harlem
just like drawn in
Globetrotters threw a bucket of confetti in front of the
that's what
yeah,
it was.
Yes, yes.
You filmed snow and then you draw each flake in. The snow
they were shining
flake
up
was,
King
was
Talos'
really, really
bald
cool.
head and yep.
Yeah, so like
when he gets
like,
away,
is,
by the way,
there are moments.
Sorry, when he gets away and he's you know he through the snow and then afterwards. The award for classic barbarian clobber move award goes to the double axe handle when he sneaks up on the one guy, claps his two hands together and does the double swing with just his hands. Wait, but why do you got to do it together? Not just a straight punch, two of them blasted.
It has a long history of success in professional wrestling, Ben. The double axe
yes.
handle. Come on,
the double
these guys
axe
know
handle.
they're wrestling.
Yes.
Larn's go-to move is, Chef's like, kiss. Stab with a knife, but, man, he's got that in his back pocket. He can axe handle you hard.
Yep.
Speaking of double, as Larn runs out of energy and the minions are about to descend upon him, Dark Wolf shows up, looses one arrow, and two land in the man's chest.
Yeah.
I'm not even mad about that.
Yeah.
I'm not mad.
He
I will
had
fight
two.
Any of you who have a problem with that scene.
No. In my head, he pulled out two and just did it. You only saw one because you're slow.
I shot the first one before I even came in the room. Dark Wolf and Farm make it back to Firekeep and tell King Gerald what they saw, that the prince is dead, the princess captured. Necron's pissed about this and is sending the glacier south. And so Dark Wolf convinces King Gerald that he needs the Firehawks for a suicide mission. And so they fly these... I don't like animated pterodactyls is what I'm finding.
they could have just like made them look cooler. They just kind of...
They could have. Because the scene where they're getting attacked, like all the arrows going into them and stuff, like that looked good.
Yeah.
That was good. That looked good to me.
Yeah. They fly him in on what is clearly a suicide mission. All of them are shot down except two. Dark Wolf and our other hero make it through. One goes after Tigra to save her. Man, the scene where Dark Wolf... He's flying his pterodactyl through a rain of arrows, pulls it up, uses it as a shield, skateboard grinds off of it, jumps through closing doors, lands by smashing a bunch of people with his axe and fights his way through. And the only time I turned the audio on for the entire movie was to hear Dark Wolf shout, "Necron."
All right. Listen, advice to henchmen.
He's pissed.
I've got some advice. If the guy is wearing a belt that takes up his entire midsection and his codpiece included, just let your wizard fight him. Don't try to fight that guy. The fuck are you thinking? He's going to waste you. Oh my God. That belt thing that he has that is most of it. I'm sorry. You just don't fight a guy who's got one of those on. I've only seen it on one guy, and he was a badass.
He really looks like a World Wrestling like championship belt.
Oh,
and
bigger.
He's got that and like a wolf head and an axe. And you're like, you take that guy. You take him.
I'll take the pterodactyl. The one that's dead and twitching.
Yeah. Take the kid from the farm. Jesus Christ.
All right, I got ponytail. You take that guy. Yeah.
So as the last Firehawk dies, I do have to give out the award for the most annoying pterodactyl. Still goes to heavy metal. Nothing beats those terrible screaming things. Necron and Dark Wolf fight. Necron is using his magic and he forcefully blows Dark Wolf with his magic, blowing this big bear of a man over and over again, but he's too much of a big bear of a man and he pounds him with his axe. Dark Wolf, something overcomes him. He's consumed with an energy and he pushes past Necron's magic. And as Necron dies, the ice... the glacier is out of control and King Jarl has no choice left but to release the lava.
My daughter's about to escape that ice castle. I'm going to release the lava on it. Like, oh, okay.
Pretty soon that should be hardened and then it'll give her a bridge to run back.
Oh, yeah, that's that's what he was thinking, yeah.
Yeah.
As Ice Peak crumbles,
that's the defense's lawyer comes up with after the fact.
He kickstarts his Firehawk that took a beating. Like, he had to land that sucker with one wing and no engine, and then he has to kickstart it for one last, like, escape ride. They absolutely get away. Our heroes, as everything crumbles, the ice and the fire meet and become a new world of steam. Tigra and Larn, as I looked it up, L-A-R-N. Tigra and Larn, they see Dark Wolf... found himself another horse, nods from his horse, says nothing. That's very Dark Horse. And the lesson of our story, as a subhuman is crawling towards them, Larn goes to crush it with a rock, which is your go-to anytime I see anyone crawling near me. Mm-hmm. Anyone reaching out and help, I'm like, well, better have to rock. Tigre gives him the advice, we have to choose a new way. And so instead of crushing him, he... just throws it past him, and they move on and kiss. And
he and the
I
subhuman.
Have to give the... He and the subhuman. Also, like, maybe that guy was suffering? I'm just saying. Was that the time... Was that a teachable moment, or...
He's kill me. No, we must learn a new way.
I'm suffering. Yes. But amongst this suffering, which I assume that guy is still gurgling with his broken lungs...
Today.
Our heroes sit by the steamy water, and they kiss... And I cannot hold it back any longer. I have to give out the award at the end of this movie for the strongest string in the kingdom goes to Tila's loin thread.
Like, doesn't break.
The shoestring holding her tits in place. It's been through a lot. this was a movie that I studied in animation school. This is a thing that all my animation friends know. And no one else does. I don't know. You guys had ever heard of it? Do you recommend this? What's your
vaguely
guys' final thoughts?
I've heard of it.
Just seeing other things Ralph Bakshi had done. You know.
I thought the animation was cool. Hey, the storyline, whatever. How much of the story from Conan the Barbarian do you know, by the way? You know, it's just cool to watch people get stabbed and shot and stuff in sword and sorcery ways. I would give it 4 out of 5 Dragonhawks.
Ah!
I mean, if you had it, let's say it was downloaded and then your internet was out and you're in a pinch, you know, like, it'll work.
If you've already downloaded it and your internet doesn't work and you can't think of tits yourself, then yeah, right, okay. I guess you could watch it.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you needed animated tits to fold laundry to, this is way up the list. That's what this is.
Well, Little Cap and Travis, we described some pretty sexy cartoon characters. Who's the sexiest cartoon character in your opinion? Jessica Rabbit, Betty Rubble? Let us know. Email
Barney
us
Rubble?
At freelegaladvicepodcast@gmail.com.
He's just a tube. Look at that tube. He's a Barney? Tube of a man. Yep. A tube with stubble. He's a stubbled tube. What's more sexy than that?
So you heard you can hear Grant describe our sexual taste. So we've done our own version of this, and if you want to see it, it's more think we still got rat tails, but and we're still shirtless, but it's more three wheelers and Bush Light. But Corey rotoscopes the shit out of it. Looks great. Yeah, you can find us on Instagram and watch our short film there. We are at Free Legal Advice Podcast.
And like Grant always says, head on over to Threads. We're one of the hottest threaders around. We're going to be sharing some outtakes from Fire and Ice, actually. We got our hands on. We got a scene with pterodactyls ironing thongs, and they're saying, it's a living. We're going to be posting that on Threads. We are under Free Legal Advice Podcast.
Ooh.
Yeah, and if you like the show, hey, can I borrow the Firehawks? I need you to loan me the Firehawks. I'll explain why later if I bring them back.
There are no Dragonhawks left. They have all been arrowed.
Arrow!
Like they're in a Teen Girl Squad cartoon.
Classic. A classic bit.
Episode 217.
Okay, because I like this. We've got some good characters already, and we've got a couple plot moments that we can kind of hammer into. We'll find where they go. We do need some locations.
Hey, what if where they land is like Dollar Store Mad Max? Huh?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Love it. Let's do, because again,
Mad Max was good.
Just like Star Wars, we take the best out of that. Mad Max is popular. We take the best from Mad Max. We capitalize off that. So what if we did a Mad Max chase scene, but with like repurposed county fair equipment?
Okay. You know what I like about this? We're talking like low budget kind of. We're talking like repurposed. What I think we're really getting to the essence of is Robert Urich and John Matuszak are going to put in performances that if you're looking at the scenery, you're missing the point, you know? The story is going to drive this. Our cohesive tone is going to keep people. And if you're looking at the scenery at that point, I'm sorry, this movie's not for you. So we can kind of, it doesn't have to be, you know, it doesn't have to be.
Yeah, well, look.
So fantastic.
It's not like the spaceships in Star Wars actually worked. Those are fucking props.
Yeah, exactly.
We will make some props.
Thank you.
There we go.
I exact. Like that. So maybe one scene, you start a chase scene inside what seems to be like a futuristic space ship, but then that same chase scene continues in what's clearly like the plaza of like a contemporary Earth hotel,
right.
And you know, you just kind of like mix today's scene with the future scene. No one, you don't care about the scenery.
We're avant-garde. Action is action. People understand
it's
that there's drama.
It's called a segue.
They're there for the drama.
Oh, I remember watching Casablanca. I remember that set they were on. Woo, what a set. No one's ever said that. No one cares. It doesn't matter.
I have
matter.
No idea where that film even takes place.
In fact, we're not even... guys, we don't even have our... we don't even have our first draft of the script, and yet I'm already working on the budget. We're cutting the budget for this scene in half, and we're giving that extra money, and we're getting two vehicles in the desert, guys, because I want drama. All right?
But so I'm willing to offer a substantial portion of my pay to make the wheels as large as possible. If you think they're too big, you are wrong.
Turn internet over.